Sometimes they are a-changing. A voice in a can tells me his name is Bob Dylan. But as the next song starts, the signal fades. I lean back in my seat, stare out at the dark windows of the store. I feel a rush of inexplicable relief. I feel like I've just heard something from the future. At the phone booth outside the store, I put in a dime and call Mother. I know she'll wait up for me until I get home.
Hello?
It's Daddy's voice at 8:15 at night.
Daddy?
Why are you up? What's wrong?
You need to come on home now, darling.
The streetlight suddenly feels too bright in my eyes. The night very cold. Is it Mama? Is she sick?
Stuart's been sitting on the porch for almost 2 hours now. He's waiting on you. Stuart?
It doesn't make sense. But Mama, she's...
Oh, Mama's fine. In fact, she's brightened up a little. Come on home, Skeeter, and tend to Stuart now.
The drive home has never felt so long. 10 minutes later, I pull in front of the house and see Stuart sitting on the top porch step. Daddy's in a rocking chair. They both stand when I turn off the car. Hey, Daddy, I say. I don't look at Stuart. Where's Mama?
She's asleep. I just checked on her.
Daddy yawns. I haven't seen him up past 7 o'clock in 10 years, when the spring cotton froze.
Night, you two. Turn the lights out when you're done.
Daddy goes inside and Stuart and I are left alone. The night is so black, so quiet, I can't see stars or a moon or even a dog in the yard. What are you doing here?
I say,
and my voice, it sounds small.
I came to talk to you.
I sit on the front step and put my head down on my arms. Just say it fast and then go on. I was getting better. I heard this song and I almost felt better 10 minutes ago. He moves closer to me, but not so close that we're touching. I wish we were touching.
I came to tell you something. I came to say that I saw her.
I lift my head up. The first word in my head is selfish. You selfish son of a bitch. Coming here to talk about Patricia.
I went out there, to San Francisco, 2 weeks ago. I got in my truck and drove for 4 days and knocked on the door of the apartment house her mama gave me the address to.
I cover my face. All I can see is Stuart pushing her hair back like he used to with me. I don't want to know this.
I told her I thought that was the ugliest thing you could do to a person. Lie that way. She looked so different. Had on this prairie-looking dress and a peace sign, and her hair was long, and she didn't have any lipstick on. And she laughed when she saw me. And then... she called me a whore.
He rubs his eyes hard with his knuckles.
She, the one who took her clothes off for that guy, said I was a whore to my daddy, a whore to Mississippi.
Why are you telling me this? My fists are clenched. I taste metal. I've bitten down on my tongue.
I drove out there because of you. After we broke up, I knew I had to get her out of my head. And I did it, Skeeter. I drove 2,000 miles there and back, and I'm here to tell you it's dead. It's gone.
Well, good, Stuart, I say. Good for you. He moves closer and leans down so I will look at him. And I feel sick, literally nauseated by the smell of bourbon on his breath. And yet, I still want to fold myself up and put my entire body in his arms. I am loving him and hating him at the same time. Go home, I say, hardly believing myself. There's no place left inside me for you.
I don't believe that, You're too late, Stuart. Can I come by on Saturday to talk some more?
I shrug, my eyes full of tears. I won't let him throw me away again. It's already happened too many times. With him, with my friends. I'd be stupid to let it happen again. I don't really care what you do. I wake up at 5 a.m. and start working on the stories. With only 17 days until our deadline, I work through the day and night with a speed and efficiency I didn't know I possessed. I finish Luvenia's story in half the time it took me to write the others, and with an intense burning headache, I turn off the light as the first rays of sun peek through the window. If Abilene will give me Constantine's story by early next week, I just might be able to pull this off. And then I realize I do not have 17 more days. How dumb of me. I have 10 days because I haven't accounted for the time it will take to mail it to New York. I'd cry if only I had the time to do it. A few hours later, I wake up and go back to work. At 5 in the afternoon, I hear a car pull up and see Stuart climb out of his truck. I tear myself away from the typewriter and go out on the front porch. Hello, I say, standing in the doorway.
Hey, Skeeter.
He nods at me, shyly, I think, compared to his way 2 nights ago.
Afternoon, Mr. Phelan. Hey there, son.
Daddy gets up from his rocking chair.
I'll let you kids talk out here.
Don't get up, Daddy. I'm sorry, but I'm busy today, Stuart. You're welcome to sit out here with Daddy as long as you like. I go back in the house, past Mother at the kitchen table drinking warm milk.
Was that Stuart I saw out there?
I go in the dining room. I stand back from the windows, where I know Stuart can't see me. I watch until he drives away, and then I just keep watching. That night, as usual, I go to Abilene's. I tell her about the deadline of only 10 days, and she looks like she might cry. Then I hand her Luvenia's chapter to read, the one I've written at lightning speed. Minnie is at the kitchen table with us, drinking a Coke, looking out the window. I hadn't known she'd be here tonight, and wish she'd leave us to work. Abilene puts it down, nods.
I think this chapter is right good. Read just as well as the slow-wrote ones.
I sigh, leaning back in my chair, thinking of what else needs to be done. We need to decide on the title, I say and rub my temples. I've been working on a few. I think we should call it Colored Domestics and the Southern Families for Which They Work.
Say, what?
Minnie says, looking at me for the first time.
That's the best way to describe it, don't you think?
I say.
If you got a corn cob up your butt.
This isn't fiction, Minnie. It's sociology. It has to sound exact.
But that don't mean it have to sound boring,
Minnie says. Abilene, I sigh, hoping we can resolve this tonight. What do you think? Abilene shrugs, and I can see already she's putting on her peacemaking smile. It seems she has to smooth things over every time Minnie and I are in the same room.
That's a good title. Of course, you gonna get tired of typing all that top of every page,
she says. I'd told her this is how it has to be done.
Well, we could shorten it a little, I say, and pull out my pencil.
Abilene scratches her nose, says,
What you think about just calling it help?
Help? Minnie repeats, like she's never heard of the word.
Help, I say.
Abilene shrugs, looks down shyly like she's a little embarrassed.
I ain't trying to take over your idea. I like to keep things simple, you know?
I guess help sound all right to me, Minnie says, and crosses her arms. I like help, I say, because I really do. I think we'll still have to put the description underneath, so the category's clear. But I think that's a good title.
Good is right, Minnie says. 'Cause if this thing gets printed, Lord knows we gonna need some.
On Sunday afternoon, with 8 days left, I come downstairs, dizzy and blinking from staring at pica type all day. I was almost glad when I heard Stuart's car pull up the drive. I rub my eyes. Maybe I'll sit with him a while, clear my head, then go back and work through the night. Stuart climbs out of his mud-splattered truck. He's still in his Sunday tie, and I try to ignore how handsome he looks. I stretch my arms. It's ridiculously warm out, considering Christmas is in 2.5 weeks. Mother's sitting on the porch in a rocking chair, swathed in blankets.
Hello, Mrs. Phelan. How are you feeling today?
Stuart asks. Mother gives him a regal nod.
Fair. Thank you for asking.
I'm surprised by the coolness in her voice. She turns back to her newsletter and I can't help but smile. Mother knows he's been stopping by, but she hasn't mentioned it but once. I have to wonder when it will come.
Hey,
he says to me quietly, and we sit on the bottom porch step. Silently, we watch our old cat Sherman sneak around a tree, his tail swaying, going after some creature we can't see. Stuart puts his hand on my shoulder.
I can't stay today. I'm heading to Dallas right now for an oil meeting, and I'll be gone 3 days,
he says.
I just came by to tell you.
All right. I shrug like it makes no difference.
All right, then,
he says and gets back in his truck. When he has disappeared, Mother clears her throat. I don't turn around and look at her in the rocking chair. I don't want her to see the disappointment in my face that he's gone.
Go ahead, Mother, I finally mutter. Say what you want to say. Don't you let him cheapen you.
I look back at her, eye her suspiciously, even though she is so frail under the wool blanket. Sorry is the fool who ever underestimates my mother.
If Stuart doesn't know how intelligent and kind I raised you to be, he can march straight on back to State Street.
She narrows her eyes out at the winter land.
Frankly, I don't care much for Stuart. He doesn't know how lucky he was to have you.
I let Mother's words sit like a tiny sweet candy on my tongue. Forcing myself up from the step, I head for the front door. There's so much work to be done and not nearly enough time. Thank you, Mother. I kiss her softly on the cheek and go inside. I'm exhausted and irritable. For 48 hours I've done nothing but type. I am stupid with facts about other people's lives. My eyes sting from the smell of typing ink. My fingers are striped with paper cuts. Who knew paper and ink could be so vicious? With just 6 days left, I go over to Abilene's. She's taken a weekday off from work, despite Elizabeth's annoyance. I can tell she knows what we need to discuss before I even say it. She leaves me in the kitchen and comes back with a letter in her hand.
Before I give this to you, I think I ought to tell you some things, so you can really understand.
I nod. I am tense in my chair. I want to tear the envelope open and get this over with. Abilene straightens her notebook that's sitting on the kitchen table. I watch as she aligns her two yellow pencils.
Remember, I told you Constantine had a daughter. Well, Lulabelle was her name. Law, she come out pale as snow. Grew hair the color of hay. Not curly like yours. Straight it was.
She was that white? I asked. I've wondered this ever since Abilene told me about Constantine's child, way back in Elizabeth's kitchen. I think about how surprised Constantine must have been to hold a white baby and know it was hers. She nods.
When Lulabelle was 4 years old, Constantine...
Abilene shifts in her chair.
She take her to a orphanage up in Chicago.
An orphanage? You mean she gave her baby away? As much as Constantine loved me, I can only imagine how much she must have loved her own child. Abilene looks me straight in the eye. I see something there I rarely see. Frustration. Antipathy.
A lot of colored women's got to give their children up, Miss Skeeter. Send their kids off 'cause they have to tend to a white family.
I look down, wondering if Constantine couldn't take care of her child because she had to take care of us.
But most send them off to family. A orphanage is different altogether.
Why didn't she send the baby to her sisters or another relative?
Her sister, she just couldn't handle it. Being Negro with white skin in Mississippi, it's like you don't belong to nobody. But it wasn't just hard on the girl. It was hard on Constantine. She... Folks would look at her. White folks would stop her. Ask all suspicious what she doing toting around a white child. Policemen used to stop on State Street, told her she need to get a uniform on. Even colored folks, they treat her different, distrustful, like she done something wrong. It was hard for her to find somebody to watch Lulabelle while she at work. Constantine got to where she didn't want to bring Lula out much.
Was she already working for my mother then?
She'd been with the old mama a few years. That's where she met the father, Connor. He worked on your farm, lived back there in Hotstack.
Abilene shakes her head.
We was all surprised Constantine would go and get herself in the family way. Some folks at church wasn't so kind about it, especially when the baby come out white, even though the father was black as me.
I'm sure Mother wasn't too pleased either. Mother, I'm sure, knew all about it. She's always kept tabs on all the colored help and their situations, where they live, if they're married, how many children they have. It's more of a control thing than a real interest. She wants to know who's walking around her property. Was it a colored orphanage or a white one? Because I'm thinking, I am hoping, maybe Constantine just wanted a better life for her child. Maybe she thought she'd be adopted by a white family and not feel so different.
Colored? White ones wouldn't take her, I heard. I guess they knew. Maybe they seen that kind of thing before. When Constantine went to the train station with Lulabelle to take her up there, I heard white folks was staring on the platform, wanting to know why a little white girl was going in the colored car. And when Constantine left her at the place up in Chicago, 4 is pretty old to get given up, Lulabelle was screaming. That's what Constantine told somebody at our church. Said Lula was screaming and thrashing, trying to get her mama to come back to her. But Constantine, even with that sound in her ears, she left her there.
As I listen, it starts to hit me, what Abilene is telling me. If I hadn't had the mother I have, I might not have thought it. She gave her up because she was ashamed? Because her daughter was white? Abilene opens her mouth to disagree, but then she closes it, looks down.
A few years later,
Constantine wrote the orphanage. Told him she made a mistake. She wanted her girl back. But Lula had been adopted already. She was gone. Constantine always said giving a child away was the worst mistake she'd ever made in her life.
Abilene leans back in her chair,
and she said if she ever got Lula Belle back, she'd never let her go.
I sit quietly, my heart aching for Constantine. I'm starting to dread what this has to do with my mother.
About 2 years ago, Constantine get a letter from Lula Belle. I reckon she was 25 by then. And it said her adoptive parents give her the address. They start writing to each other, and Lula Belle says she want to come down and stay with her a while. Constantine, law, she's so nervous she couldn't walk straight. Too nervous to eat. Wouldn't even take no water. Kept throwing it up. I had her on my prayer list.
2 years ago. I was up at school then. Why didn't Constantine tell me in her letters what was going on?
She took all her savings and bought new clothes for Lula Belle. Hair things. Had the church bee sew her a new quilt for the bed Lula gonna sleep in. She told us at prayer meeting, what if she hate me? She's gonna ask me why I give her away, and if I tell her the truth, she'll hate me for what I done.
Abilene looks up from her cup of tea, smiles a little.
She tell us, I can't wait for Skeeter to meet her when she get back home from school. I forgot about that. I didn't know who Skeeter was back then.
I remember my last letter from Constantine, that she had a surprise for me. I realize now she'd wanted to introduce me to her daughter. I swallow back tears coming up in my throat. What happened when Lula Belle came down to see her? Abilene slides the envelope across the table.
I reckon you ought to read that part at home.
At home, I go upstairs. Without even stopping to sit down, I open Abilene's letter. It is on notebook paper, covering the front and back, written in cursive pencil. Afterward, I stare at the 8 pages I've already written about walking to Hot Stack with Constantine, the puzzles we worked on together, her pressing her thumb in my hand. I take a deep breath and put my hands on the typewriter keys. I can't waste any more time. I have to finish her story. I write about what Abilene told me, that Constantine had a daughter and had to give her up so she could work for our family. The Millers, I call us, after Henry, my favorite band author. I don't put in that Constantine's daughter was high yellow. I just want to show that Constantine's love for me began with missing her own child. Perhaps that's what made it so unique, so deep. It didn't matter that I was white. While she was wanting her own daughter back, I was longing for Mother not to be disappointed in me. For 2 days, I write all the way through my childhood, my college years, where we sent letters to each other every week. But then I stop and listen to Mother coughing downstairs. I hear Daddy's footsteps going to her. I light a cigarette and stub it out, thinking, don't start up again. The toilet water rushes through the house, filled with a little more of my mother's body. I light another cigarette and smoke it down to my fingers. I can't write about what's in Abilene's letter. That afternoon, I call Abilene at home. I can't put it in the book, I tell her, about Mother and Constantine. I'll end it when I go to college. I just...
Miss Skeeter,
I know I should. I know I should be sacrificing as much as you and Minnie and all of you, but I can't do that to my mother.
No one expects you to, Miss Skeeter. Truth is, I wouldn't think real high of you if you did.
The next evening, I go to the kitchen for some tea.
Eugenia, are you downstairs?
I tread back to Mother's room. Daddy's not in bed yet. I hear the television on out in the relaxing room. I'm here, Mama. She's in bed at 6 in the evening, the white bowl by her side.
Have you been crying? You know how that ages your skin, dear.
I sit in the straight cane chair beside her bed. I think about how I should begin. Part of me understands why Mother acted the way she did, because really, wouldn't anyone be angry about what Lulabelle did? But I need to hear my mother's side of the story. If there's anything redeeming about my mother that Abilene left out of the letter, I want to know. I want to talk about Constantine, I say.
Oh, Eugenia,
Mother chides and pats my hand.
That was almost 2 years ago.
Mama, I say, and make myself look into her eyes. Even though she is terribly thin and her collarbone is long and narrow beneath her skin, her eyes are still as sharp as ever.
What happened?
What happened with her daughter? Mother's jaw tightens, and I can tell she's surprised that I know about her. I wait for her to refuse to talk about it as before. She takes a deep breath, moves the white bowl a little closer to her, says,
Constantine sent her up to Chicago to live. She couldn't take care of her.
I nod and wait.
They are different that way, you know. Those people have children and don't think about the consequences until it's too late.
They. Those people. It reminds me of Hilly. Mother sees it on my face, too.
Now you look. I was good to Constantine. Oh, she talked back plenty of times, and I put up with it. But Skeeter, she didn't give me a choice this time.
I know, Mother. I know what happened.
Who told you? Who else knows about this?
I see the paranoia rising in Mother's eyes. It is her greatest fear coming true, and I feel sorry for her. I will never tell you who told me. All I can say is, it was no one important to you, I say. I can't believe you would do that, Mother.
How dare you judge me after what she did? Do you really know what happened? Were you there?
I see the old anger, an obstinate woman who survived years of bleeding ulcers.
That girl!
She shakes her knobby finger at me.
She showed up here. I had the entire D.A.R. chapter at the house. You were up at school, and the doorbell was ringing nonstop, and Constantine was in the kitchen, making all that coffee over since the old percolator burned the first two pots right up.
Mother waves away the remembered reek of scorched coffee.
They were all in the living room having cake. 95 people in the house, and she's drinking coffee. She's talking to Sarah Vaughn's sister and walking around the house like a guest and sticking cake in her mouth. And then she's filling out the form to become a member.
Again, I nod. Maybe I didn't know those details, but they don't change what happened.
She looked white as anybody, and she knew it too. She knew exactly what she was doing, and so I say, how do you do? And she laughs and says, fine. So I say, and what is your name? And she says, you mean you don't know? I'm Lulabelle Bates. I'm grown now, and I've moved back in with Mama. I got here yesterday morning. And then she goes over to help herself to another piece of cake.
Bates,
I say, because this is another detail I didn't know, albeit insignificant. She changed her last name back to Constantine's.
Thank God nobody heard her. But then, she starts talking to Phoebe Miller, the president of the Southern States of the D.A.R., and I pulled her into the kitchen and I said, Lulabelle, you can't stay here. You need to go on. And, oh, she looked at me haughty. She said, what, you don't allow colored Negroes in your living room if we're not cleaning up? That's when Constantine walks in the kitchen, and she looks as shocked as I am. I say, Lulabelle, you get out of this house before I call Mr. Phelan.
But she won't budge. Says, when I thought she was white, I treated her fine and dandy. Says, up in Chicago, she's part of some black cat group. So I call Constantine. I say, you get your daughter out of my house right now. Mother's eyes seem more deep-set than ever. Her nostrils are flaring. So Constantine, she tells Lulabelle to go on back to their house. And Lulabelle says, fine, I was leaving anyway. And heads for the dining room. And of course I stop her. Oh no, I say. You go out the back door, not the front with the white guests. I was not about to have the D.A.R. find out about this. And I told that bawdy girl, whose own mama we gave $10 extra to every Christmas, she was not to step foot on this farm again. And do you know what she did?
Yes, I think, but I keep my face blank. I'm still searching for the redemption.
Spit. In my face. A Negro in my home, trying to act white.
I shudder. Who would ever have the nerve to spit at my mother?
I told Constantine that girl better not show her face here again. Not to Hotstack, not to the state of Mississippi. Nor would I tolerate her keeping terms with Lulabelle, not as long as the old daddy was paying Constantine's rent on that house back there.
But it was Lulabelle acting that way, not Constantine.
What if she stayed? I couldn't have that girl going around Jackson, acting white when she was colored, telling everybody she got into a D.A.R. party at Longleaf. I just thank God nobody ever found out about it. She tried to embarrass me in my own home, Eugenia. 5 minutes before, she had Phoebe Miller filling out the form for her to join. She hadn't seen her daughter in 20 years. You can't tell a person they can't see their child.
But Mother is caught up in her own story.
And Constantine, she thought she could get me to change my mind. Oh, Miss Phelan, please just let her stay at the house. She won't come on this side again. I hadn't seen her in so long. And that Lulabelle, with her hand on her hip, saying, yeah, my daddy died, and my mama was too sick to take care of me when I was a baby. She had to give me away. You can't keep us apart.
Mother lowers her voice. She seems matter-of-fact now.
I looked at Constantine, and I felt so much shame for her. To get pregnant in the first place, and then to lie.
I feel sick and hot. I'm ready for this to be over. Mother narrows her eyes.
It's time you learned, Eugenia, how things really are. You idolize Constantine too much. You always have.
She points her finger at me.
They are not like regular people.
I can't look at her. I close my eyes. And then what happened, Mother?
I asked Constantine just as plain as day.
Is that what you told her?
Is that how you cover your mistakes?
This is the part I was hoping wasn't true. This is what I'd hoped Abilene had been wrong about. I told Lilibel the truth. I told her, your daddy didn't die. He left the day after you were born, and your mama hadn't been sick a day in her life. She gave you up because you were too high yellow. She didn't want you.
Why couldn't you let her believe what Constantine told her?
Constantine was so scared she wouldn't like her. That's why she told her those things.
Because Lilibel needed to know the truth. She needed to go back to Chicago, where she belonged.
I let my head sink into my hands. There is no redeeming piece of the story. I know why Abilene hadn't wanted to tell me. A child should never know this about her own mother.
I never thought Constantine would go to Illinois with her, Eugenia. Honestly, I was sorry to see her go.
You weren't, I say. I think about Constantine. After living 50 years in the country, sitting in a tiny apartment in Chicago, how lonely she must have felt. How bad her knees must have felt in that cold.
I was. And even though I told her not to write you, she probably would have, if there had been more time.
More time?
Constantine died, Skeeter. I sent her a check for her birthday to the address I found for her daughter. But Lilibel sent it back with a copy of the obituary.
Constantine, I cry. I wish I'd known. Why didn't you tell me, Mama?
Mother sniffs, keeping her eyes straight ahead. She quickly wipes her eyes.
Because I knew you'd blame me when it wasn't my fault.
When did she die? How long was she living in Chicago? I ask. Mother pulls the basin closer, hugs it to her side.
3 weeks.
Abilene opens her back door, lets me in. Minnie is sitting at the table, stirring her coffee. When she sees me, she tugs the sleeve of her dress down, but I see the edge of a white bandage on her arm. She grumbles a hello, then goes back to her cup. I put the manuscript down on the table with a thump. If I mail it in the morning, that still leaves 6 days for it to get there. We might just make it. I smile through my exhaustion.
Law, that is something. Look at all of them pages.
Abilene grins and sits on her stool.
266 of them.
Now we just wait and see, I say, and we all three stare at the stack.
Finally,
Minnie says, and I can see the hint of something. Not exactly a smile, but more like satisfaction. The room grows quiet. It's dark outside the window. The post office is already closed, so I brought it over to show Abilene and Minnie one last time before I mail it. Usually, I only bring over sections at a time.
What if they find out?
Abilene says quietly. Minnie looks up from her coffee.
What if folks find out Niceville is Jackson, or figure out who?
They ain't gonna know, Minnie says. Jackson ain't no special place. There's 10,000 towns just like it. We haven't talked about this in a while. And besides Winnie's comment about tongues, we haven't really discussed the actual consequences besides the maids losing their jobs. For the past 8 months, all we've thought about is just getting it written.
Minnie, you got your kids to think about,
Abilene says.
And Leroy, if he find out.
The sureness in Minnie's eyes changes to something darting, paranoid.
Leroy gonna be mad, sure enough.
She tugs at her sleeve again.
Mad, then sad. If the white people catch hold of me.
You think maybe we ought to find a place we could go? In case it get bad?
Abilene asks. They both think about this, then shake their heads.
I don't know where we'd go,
Minnie says.
You might think about that, Miss Skeeter. Somewhere for yourself,
Abilene says. I can't leave Mother, I say. I've been standing and I sink down into a chair. Abilene, do you really think they'd hurt us? I mean, like, what's in the papers? Abilene cocks her head at me, confused. She wrinkles her forehead like we've had a misunderstanding.
They'd beat us. They'd come out here with baseball bats. Maybe they won't kill us, but...
But who exactly would do this? The white women we've written about? They wouldn't hurt us.
Would they?
I ask.
Don't you know white men's like nothing better than protecting the white women's of their town?
My skin prickles. I'm not so afraid for myself, but for what I've done to Abilene, to Minnie, to Luvinia and Faybelle and 8 other women. The book is sitting there on the table. I want to put it in my satchel and hide it. Instead, I look to Minnie because, for some reason, I think she's the only one among us who really understands what could happen. She doesn't look back at me, though. She is lost in thought. She's running her thumbnail back and forth across her lip. Minnie, what do you think? I ask. Minnie keeps her eyes on the window, nods at her own thoughts.
I think what we need is some insurance. Ain't no such thing, Abilene says. Not for us. What if we put the terrible awful in the book?
Minnie asks.
We can't, Minnie, Abilene says. It'll give us away. But if we put it in there, then Miss Hilly can't let anybody find out the book is about Jackson. She don't want anybody to know that story's about her. And if they start getting close to figuring it out, she gonna steal them the other way. Law, Minnie, that is too risky. Nobody can predict what that woman gonna do. Nobody know that story but Miss Hilly and her own mama,
Minnie says.
And Miss Celia, but she ain't got no friends to tell anyway.
What happened? I ask. Is it really that terrible? Abilene looks at me. My eyebrows go up.
Who she gonna admit that to? Minnie asks Abilene. She ain't gonna want you and Miss Lee folk to get identified either, Abilene, 'cause then people gonna be just one step away. I'm telling you, Miss Hilly is the best protection we got.
Abilene shakes her head, then nods, then shakes it again. We watch her and wait.
If we put the terrible awful in the book, and people do find out that was you and Miss Hilly, then you in so much trouble.
Abilene shudders.
They ain't even a name for it. That's a risk I'm just gonna have to take. I already made up my mind. Either put it in, or pull my part out altogether.
Abilene and Minnie's eyes hang on each other's. We can't pull out Minnie's section. It's the last chapter of the book. It's about getting fired 19 times in the same small town. About what it's like trying to keep the anger inside, but never succeeding. It starts with her mother's rules of how to work for white women, all the way up to leaving Mrs. Walters. I want to speak up, but I keep my mouth shut. Finally, Abilene sighs.
All right,
Abilene says, shaking her head.
I reckon you better tell her, then.
Minnie narrows her eyes at me. I pull out a pencil and pad.
I'm only telling you for the book, you understand? Ain't nobody sharing no heartfelt secrets here.
I'll make us some more coffee,
Abilene says. On the drive back to Longleaf, I shudder, thinking about Minnie's pie story. I don't know if we'd be safer leaving it out or putting it in. Not to mention, if I can't get it written in time to make the mail tomorrow, it will put us yet another day later, shorting our chances to make the deadline. I can picture the red fury on Hilly's face, the hate she still feels for Minnie. I know my old friend well. If we're found out, Hilly will be our fiercest enemy. Even if we're not found out, printing the pie story will put Hilly in a rage like we've never seen. But Minnie's right. It's our best insurance. I look over my shoulder every quarter mile. I keep exactly to the speed limit and stay on the back roads. They will beat us, rings in my ears. I write all night, grimacing over the details of Minnie's story, and all the next day. At 4 in the afternoon, I jam the manuscript in a cardboard letterbox. I quickly wrap the box in brown paper wrapping. Usually it takes 7 or 8 days, but it will somehow have to get to New York City in 6 days to make the deadline. I speed to the post office, knowing it closes at 4:30, despite my fear of the police, and rush inside to the window. I haven't gone to sleep since night before last. My hair is literally sticking straight up in the air. The postman's eyes widen.
Windy outside?
Please, can you get this out today? It's going to New York. He looks at the address.
Out-of-town truck's gone, ma'am. It'll have to wait until morning.
He stamps the postage and I head back home. As soon as I walk in, I go straight to the pantry and call Elaine Stein's office. Her secretary puts me through and I tell her, in a hoarse, tired voice, I mailed the manuscript today.
The last editor's meeting is in 6 days, Eugenia. Not only will it have to get here in time, I'll have to have time to read it. I'd say it's highly unlikely.
There is nothing left to say, so I just murmur, I know. Thank you for the chance. And I add, Merry Christmas, Mrs. Stein.
We call it Hanukkah, but thank you, Miss Phelan.
Chapter 28. After I hang up the phone, I go stand on the porch and stare out at the cold land. I'm so dog-tired I hadn't even noticed Dr. Neal's car is here. He must have arrived while I was at the post office. I lean against the rail and wait for him to come out of Mother's room. Down the hall, through the open front door, I can see that her bedroom door is closed. A little while later, Dr. Neal gently closes her door behind him and walks out to the porch. He stands beside me.
I gave her something to help the pain, he says.
The pain? Was Mama vomiting this morning? Old Dr. Neal stares at me through his cloudy blue eyes. He looks at me long and hard as if trying to decide something about me.
Your mother has cancer, Eugenia, in the lining of the stomach.
I reach for the side of the house. I'm shocked, and yet, didn't I know this?
She didn't want to tell you.
He shakes his head.
But since she refuses to stay in the hospital, you need to know. These next few months are going to be pretty hard.
He raises his eyebrows at me.
On her and you, too.
Few months? Is that all? I cover my mouth with my hand, hear myself groan.
Maybe longer. Maybe sooner, honey.
He shakes his head.
Knowing your mother, though.
He glances into the house. She's gonna fight it like the devil. I stand there in a daze, unable to speak.
Call me any time, Eugenia, at the office or at home.
I walk into the house, back to Mother's room. Daddy is on the settee by the bed, staring at nothing. Mother is sitting straight up. She rolls her eyes when she sees me.
Well, I guess he told you,
she says. Tears drip off my chin. I hold her hands.
How long have you known?
About 2 months.
Oh, Mama.
Now stop that, Eugenia. It can't be helped.
But what can I... I can't just sit here and watch you...
I can't even say the word. All the words are too awful.
You most certainly will not just sit here. Carlton is going to be a lawyer. And you...
She shakes her finger at me.
Don't think you can just let yourself go after I'm gone. I am calling Fannie Mae's the minute I can walk to the kitchen and make your hair appointments through 1975.
I sink down on the settee and Daddy puts his arm around me. I lean against him and cry. The Christmas tree James So put up a week ago dries and drops needles every time someone walks into the relaxing room. It's still 6 days until Christmas, but no one's bothered to water it. The few presents Mother bought and wrapped back in July sit under the tree. One for Daddy that's obviously a church tie. Something small and square for Carlton. A heavy box for me that I suspect is a new Bible. Now that everyone knows about Mother's cancer, it is as if she's let go of the few threads that kept her upright. The marionette strings are cut, and even her head looks wobbly on its post. The most she can do is get up and go to the bathroom, or sit on the porch a few minutes every day. In the afternoon, I take Mother her mail, Good Housekeeping magazine, church newsletters, DAR updates. How are you? I push her hair back from her head and she closes her eyes like she relishes the feel. She is the child now and I am the mother.
I'm all right.
Pascagoula comes in. She sets a tray of broth on the table. Mother barely shakes her head when she leaves, staring off at the empty doorway.
Oh, no, she says, grimacing. I can't. Eat.
You don't have to eat, Mama. We'll do it later.
It's just not the same with Pascagoula here, is it?
She says. No, I say. It's not. This is the first time she's mentioned Constantine since our terrible discussion.
They say it's like true love, good help. You only get one in a lifetime.
I nod, thinking how I ought to go write that down, include it in the book. But, of course, it's too late. It's already been mailed. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing any of us can do now, except wait for what's coming. Christmas Eve is depressing and rainy and warm. Every half hour, Daddy comes out of Mother's room and looks out the front window and asks, "Is he here?" Even if no one's listening. My brother Carlton is driving home tonight from LSU Law School, and we'll both be relieved to see him. All day, Mother has been vomiting and dry heaving. She can barely keep her eyes open, but she cannot sleep.
"Charlotte, you need to be in the hospital,"
Dr. Neal said that afternoon. I don't know how many times he's said that in the past week.
At least let me get the nurse out here to stay with you. Charles Neal,
Mother said, not even raising her head from the mattress.
I am not spending my final days in a hospital. nor will I turn my own house into one. Dr. Neal just sighed, gave Daddy more medicine, a new kind, and explained to him how to give it to her.
But will it help her?
I heard Daddy whisper out in the hall.
Can it make her better?
Dr. Neal put his hand on Daddy's shoulder.
No, Carlton.
At 6 o'clock that night, Carlton finally pulls up, comes in the house.
Hey there, Skeeter.
He hugs me to him. He's rumpled from the car drive, handsome in his college cable-knit sweater. The fresh air on him smells good. It's nice to have someone else here.
Jesus, why is it so hot in this house?
She's cold, I say quietly. All the time. I go with him to the back. Mother sits up when she sees him, holds her thin arms out.
Oh, Carlton, you're home, she says.
Carlton stops still. Then he bends down and hugs her, very gently. He glances back at me and I can see the shock on his face. I turn away. I cover my mouth so I don't cry because I won't be able to quit. Carlton's look tells me more than I want to know. When Stuart drops by on Christmas Day, I don't stop him when he tries to kiss me. But I tell him, I'm only letting you because my mother is dying.
Eugenia?
I hear Mother calling. It is New Year's Eve and I'm in the kitchen getting some tea. Christmas has passed and James O took the tree out this morning. Needles still litter the house, but I've managed to put away the decorations and store them back in the closet. It was tiring and frustrating, trying to wrap each ornament the way Mother likes, to get them ready for next year. I don't let myself question the futility of it. I've heard nothing from Mrs. Stein and don't even know if the package made it on time. Last night I broke down and called Abilene to tell her I've heard nothing, just for the relief of talking about it to someone.
I keep thinking of things to put in,
Abilene says.
I have to remind myself we already done sent it off.
Me too, I say. I'll call you as soon as I hear something. I go in the back. Mother is propped up on her pillows. The gravity of sitting upright, we've learned, helps keep the vomit down. The white enamel bowl is beside her. Hey, Mama, I say. What can I get you?
Eugenia, you cannot wear those slacks to the Holbrook New Year's party.
When Mother blinks, she keeps her eyes closed a second too long. She's exhausted. A skeleton in a white dressing gown with absurdly fancy ribbons and starched lace. Her neck swims in the neckline like an 80-pound swan's. She cannot eat unless it's through a straw. She's lost her power of smell completely. Yet, she can sense, from an entirely different room, if my wardrobe is disappointing. They canceled the party, Mama. Perhaps she is remembering Hilly's party last year. From what Stuart's told me, all the parties were canceled because of the president's death. Not that I'd be invited anyway. Tonight, Stuart's coming over to watch Dick Clark on the television. Mother places her tiny, angular hand on mine. So frail the joints show through her skin. I was Mother's dress size when I was 11. She looks at me evenly.
I think you need to go on and put those slacks on the list now.
But they're comfortable and they're warm and... She shakes her head, shuts her eyes.
I'm sorry, Skeeter.
There is no arguing anymore. All right, I sigh. Mother pulls the pad of paper from under the covers. Tucked in the invisible pocket she's had sewn in every garment, where she keeps anti-vomiting pills, tissues. Tiny, dictatorial lists. Even though she is so weak, I'm surprised by the steadiness of her hand as she writes on
the do not wear list. Gray, shapeless, mannishly tailored pants. She smiles, satisfied. It sounds macabre, but when Mother realized that after she's dead, she won't be able to tell me what to wear anymore, she came up with this ingenious post-mortem system. She's assuming I'll never go buy new unsatisfactory clothes on my own. She's probably right. Still no vomiting yet? I ask, because it's 4 o'clock, and Mother's had 2 bowls of broth and hasn't been sick once today. Usually she's thrown up at least 3 times by now. Not even once, she says, but then she closes her eyes and within seconds, she's asleep. On New Year's Day, I come downstairs to start on the black-eyed peas for good luck. Pascagoula set them out to soak last night, instructed me on how to put them in the pot and turn on the flame, put the ham hock in with them. It's pretty much a 2-step process, yet everyone seems so nervous about me turning on the stove. I remember that Constantine always used to come by on January.